Hi everyone, this is Fen Tom's Divorce Coaching Podcast, and today, very exciting, we've got another guest, and again it's all our theme of new year, a new life and fresh starts, and something very close to my heart. We're going to be talking about domestic abuse, domestic violence, the awareness, what's been happening around COVID. So hopefully those of you that are listening are going to get a lot out of this. And is it something that you're familiar with, Tom? Do you see a lot of clients in your practice that are experiencing domestic abuse? And actually, I just want to shout out first, it's not just the women. The men can get abused as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And in answer to your question, unfortunately, the answer is yes. Mm. And with men as well. More so recently than when I was first starting out. Mm-hmm. And that's only been within the last, 18 months. A huge shift, a huge change. But also, again, we've said about this before, we said about it just before we start recording, but the reason that we do this is to bring out those topics, those subjects, those stories, those experiences that a lot of people aren't talking about, and bring them to the forefront, the limelight, to get talking about these issues so that they aren't swept under the carpet, so they're not ignored, and that people find the resources and the support and the help, and then hear inspiring stories like our special guest today, which I'll let you introduce, Beth.
Yes, we've got Sarah today, who is a past client of mine. And Sarah's going to be talking a little bit about how she got to where she is now. She's looking forward to a fresh start, a new life and a new year. And this is what this podcast is going to be all about. And, you know, lockdown has had a big impact on many, many people. You know, a lot of people have been reevaluating their relationship, thinking about whether they want to stay in their marriage, you know, reevaluating whether they're happy or not. And also, you know, I think there's been a big surge in awareness for domestic abuse, which I think is a good thing. There's so much more awareness. And I think a lot of people have had to acknowledge as well that actually they're in a marriage or a relationship where there is abuse. And that can be a really hard step to take. And I know that our guest Sarah today had to face that during lockdown. And I'm sure you won't mind me saying, Sarah, that it was a big moment for you, wasn't it?
Massive, yeah, absolutely massive. And I think you're right, lockdown brought everything to a head for me. I'd been going on for years, if I'm brutally honest with myself, being unhappy in my marriage. I agree with what you've said about awareness of domestic abuse situations being raised recently, and I think historically you think domestic abuse, you think a black eye, you think a punch, a hit. I was never hit in my marriage. However, it was an abusive marriage. And as somebody who considers herself to be quite a strong, independent woman, that was a very, very difficult thing for me to come to terms with. I blamed myself. How have I allowed this marriage to become like this? It was a huge thing to come to terms with, really.
And I just want to say before we get into this podcast that, you know, I kind of salute you, Sarah, for having the courage to come on to this podcast to talk about it, because a lot of victims don't feel strong enough to talk about it. They don't feel strong enough to leave a relationship or their marriage, and they don't feel strong enough to even get to that point of acknowledgement, which is like the first step, to acknowledge that things aren't right, to acknowledge that you are being abused is huge. You know, because as you know, Tom, people will normalize the behavior that's going on. They put up with it because actually there are sections of their marriage or relationships that are good. And they think, well, you know, that last week wasn't great, but this week will be better. And then it happens again, and then it happens again. And I think, you know, lockdown has and COVID have brought things to a head for many people.
Yeah. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. You know, somebody's made the comment to me before about, well, if it was that bad, why did you stay? It wasn't like that constantly. It's the whole frog in hot water situation. You know, my relationship with this man didn't start like that. If it was, I'd have run for the hills. But gradually, over time, things would happen. And then exactly as you said, oh, well, you know, we have a nice life, it's not that bad, just this has happened or that's happened, but look at what we have got. We've got children together, And it is a massive, massive thing to walk away from all of that. And I had to be brave, but I've done a lot of work on myself this year and realised that actually I love myself enough not to live in that situation anymore. I'm on my own now, and less lonely than when I was married and with him.
It's interesting you said there about the kind of different forms of abuse, because that's the other thing as well. Like you said, stereotypically, and I suppose from what we're kind of taught from younger age from watching TVs and things like that, or hearing stories, is that it's a black eye, isn't it? Like walking through the door and things like that, which of course still happen, but there's many other forms of abuse, from emotional abuse, verbal abuse. I was talking with a financial planner recently around financial abuse, and how someone may be very controlling over the finances. And there's so many different forms. And like you said, it's not like this was happening from day one when you guys first met and were going out, dating, clubbing, whatever, and falling in love and moving in together and all the rest of it. It's kind of systematic over a period of time. So when was it for you that you started to notice and really understand and recognise that this was a form of abuse to you, and what it was doing to you? What was the kind of, I suppose, I don't want to say wake up call, because it kind of undermines the seriousness of it, but if you know what I mean, like, when was the kind
of... I do. And whilst I probably sat in my marriage bitterly unhappy for the last 3 to 4 years, I think my wake up moment was lockdown. I remember his car pulling up on the drive. The lockdown had been announced, and I just remember thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be shut down with him now. And the things that would go on in our marriage, let's say it wasn't a punch. He refuses to this day to acknowledge how any of his behaviour may have made me feel. And that when you're with somebody who pretty much blames everything on you and has a sort of perfect impression of themselves and this sort of superiority over you, it's very different. Very difficult. I remember lockdown starting and just thinking, I felt sick to my stomach, and really on edge, and just sat there and thought, this is not right. This is not right that the prospect of being stuck at home for the next, 3 weeks, I think originally the lockdown was anticipated. The prospect of being locked down for 3 weeks with your husband makes you feel like this. And that's when I started to do a little bit of digging around on the internet. We lived a very, very busy life. I worked, he worked. The children had lots of clubs. He had outside interests. We were very rarely spending time together. And suddenly we were in a situation where we were in the house 24/7. I didn't have the clubs to take the children to. I didn't have work to escape to. I didn't have that busy, busy life that I'd been throwing myself into. I'd created a life that was almost too busy for me, really. I think as a way of coping with the situation that I was in, and as a way to not acknowledge how bad and how horrible everything felt at home. And lockdown forced me to acknowledge that. Whilst I'd not been happy for a long time, I think that was the point that I, started to do some digging, and I saw an ad that Faye had put on Facebook, which almost felt like somebody had just jumped into my relationship and observed it and then written a list of some of the things that happened. And Faye offered a 20-minute consultation where I remember sitting upstairs quietly, hidden away, talking to you and you saying these things. You can see so many red flags, and that's where my sort of divorce coaching started.
I mean, it was, I'm sure you won't mind me saying, Sarah, it's been a long road for you, for a person. And again, it's men as well. I'm sure you've had experience of this, Tom, with especially your male clients. For someone to take that step from acknowledgement to, okay, what do I do? is a big one, because obviously in the middle of lockdown for Sarah, she got that acknowledgement, and facing that is tough in the first place. And then it's, oh my gosh, what am I going to do, faced with lockdown, being in the same house as that person, you know, having children in the house, you know, there's a lot of fear that goes on, and fear of the unknown, and fear of how am I going to get support? Who's going to listen to me? Who's going to help me?
What were some of the first steps that you took then, Sarah, after finding Faye on your discovery call? What was it? Just if there's anybody watching that maybe they're, this is really resonating with them and they're thinking it's part of that. So, okay, how can I build a safety plan? What can I do? What support do I need? What resources? What kind of some of the first steps that really helped you?
I think I was given through Faye a safe space to really explore how I felt, and instead of sitting and pushing everything under a carpet and just pretending that everything was all okay, I was able to talk about the things that I wasn't happy about, the things that didn't make me feel good about myself, and to have those acknowledged and not be told, oh, it's you can't take a joke, there were so many things where it would always, if I tried to speak to him about it, it would be sort of just turned round and used against me. I would claim things, I would perceive things he would never sort of acknowledge or give any weight to how I felt. And to have somebody who would say to me, do you know what, that's not okay, you're okay to feel this way about this, was really the first part of me being able to explore how I really felt. And I spent a lot of time trying to work out what I wanted, because I think for everybody, but for me particularly, I was very busy in my life, and I wore a hat as a wife and as a mom and as a daughter and as a friend and as this work person. And actually lockdown gave me the opportunity to sit and try and dig myself back out again and decide, what did I want? What did I deserve? What did the girl inside need? Where had she gone? She'd got completely lost along the way. You know, motherhood is all encompassing, and it's it just gave me a chance and a safe space with Faye, I say, to talk about how I felt, and I suppose just to be reassured that actually I wasn't being unreasonable for not wanting to be treated like this, for not wanting to be felt like this. Not to feel like this. And then we had quite regular sessions, really, where it took me a long time to reach the point, as we refer to it, as jumping off the cliff. There was a part of me that thought, you know, what else can I do to save my marriage? I have two children, you know, we have a nice life. Is there anything else that I can do? But I think during my discussions, I was able to sort of identify that really there was not much else that I could do. There's only so much that you can do to meet a person and to try and salvage things. And actually, I'd reached the point that I didn't want to do that anymore.
And it's worth just sort of telling anyone that's listening, you know, when you face that acknowledgement and thinking, right, what do I do next? What comes with that is this huge lack of confidence. Your self-esteem plummets because you think you're not good enough, you're not worthy, you don't deserve to be happy. So all of that actually holds you back from doing actually from what you should be doing. So a lot of the work that I did with Sarah was to try and help her see her self-worth and to build that up. And like she said, you know, she was a mum, she was a daughter, she was a wife, she had a job. It's actually putting herself to the top of that list and try to be selfish. You know, when you're a victim, you don't want to be selfish. You don't think it's your right to be selfish. But actually, a lot of the work we did was based around that. And I think you, Sarah, you found that difficult at times, didn't you, to actually think that you were worth something?
Oh, I did. My self-esteem was absolutely in shreds from years of having that sort of knocked down by him, really. You have your opinions dismissed a lot, and when somebody talks down to you and humiliates you in front of people and constantly criticises what you do and how you do it, and and doesn't allow you an opinion that makes you feel like you don't matter, makes you feel like how you feel doesn't matter. And I threw myself into being a mum. I threw myself into doing things with the kids. And so on the surface, we had this lovely, happy life, but underneath, we really didn't. And that was probably more than half my battle of leaving him, was getting myself mentally prepared to do it.
Finding you again as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of a real poignant point there that you both kind of made. And likewise, I've found this with a number of clients that I've worked with in similar scenarios, and it's where you said about like your opinion doesn't matter and you're constantly kind of belittled. You end up being quite isolated from other friends and family. You find other focuses, whether it be the kids or work and things like that. There's no equality in the relationship. There's somebody else taking all of that control, which is just constantly berating you and pushing you further down. And so the first stage where you are really finding you again, aren't they, I suppose, and finding your confidences, your self-esteem, your self-belief, getting rid of those limiting beliefs and limiting decisions, helping you understand what it is that you really want and who you really are, and where you've got that strength to be able to make the changes you want. And for anybody that's maybe watching this thinking, well, I can't do that, you can. Anybody can. If Sarah, you've done this in the middle of lockdown and a global pandemic. my metaphorical hat off to you. So it can be done. It's about finding those right resources to support you in a positive way to help you build and rebuild that confidence and that self-belief in you.
Yeah, and there were times, again, where we'd have a little session while she was sat in a car and she'd say to me, literally, I can't do this. And it was literally trying to change, like you say, that mindset, saying, right, let's just break it down. When you look at it as a whole, it was huge. But if we just break it down into pieces and right, okay, what's the next step? What can we do next? Mm-hmm. Actually showing Sarah that she could do it. That was a big part of the work that I did with her, to give her that self-belief.
I remember us talking.
The fact that, yes, she can do it because she's done it.
Yeah. I remember us talking at the beginning and me saying to you, Faye, if I don't do this, if I don't follow this through now, I'm going to be just devastated with myself. I need to do it. And it was something that you kept bringing me back to. Do you remember when you said this? Do you remember when you said this? Yes. Do you still feel like that? Yes. Right. Keep going. You can do it. And it was.
It is, and I just want to say, you know, having that support network around, whether you're being, you know, being abused or not, you know, any divorce, you need that support network. I know you had friends that you talked to, and it kind of highlights the fact we were talking about men, weren't we, Tom? You know, men who are being abused, actually to having to tell someone, a friend or a work colleague, that's a big thing for a man to do, isn't it?
Yeah, no, huge thing. I've met a number of gentlemen through a couple of other local support groups that I'm connected to, and one in particular up in Bedfordshire, run by a friend of mine called Four Men to Talk. It's just a safe space for guys to come along and talk about whatever it might be. They're talking about football, might be talking about work, their relationship, whatever it might be. But that was a bit of an eye opener. I mean, you see and read the stats in the news or whatever and things like that. But then we're actually faced with it in real life terms and witnessing this person across from you. It's really scary. But the actual fact, I did actually pull out some stats because I was having a look at it. It was quite intriguing today. Office of National Statistics, there you go, I actually said it right, did a crime survey in New England, Wales, March 2019 to March 20, so this year, 5.5% of adults, so that's anyone from 16 to 74 years old, was a victim and suffered from some form of domestic abuse. That's over 2.3 million people.
It's amazing. And I remember, you know, every day during lockdown, when we were, you know, during that March time, I was seeing something in the news or online every day about someone being abused, something happening. And the one that springs to mind, which I actually did a little piece on my Facebook about, I think, was a young nurse. She was a mum. I mean, she was only in her 20s, and she was literally killed in broad daylight by her estranged partner. And it was things like that that you were seeing every single day. And I think, you know, putting it out there on the news and via social media just brought this huge awareness to people that I don't think was around before, to actually say, look, this is going on, this is happening during lockdown. So for that, it's great, because I think, you know, people are now becoming, you know, people who are going through it are acknowledging, are going to get help from other people, are talking to get support.
What sort of advice would you give to someone watching this, Sarah, that might be in a similar kind of situation? What sort of advice and input would you give, not from a coaching point of view, but from someone who's been there and lived it and breathed it?
I would strongly urge them to talk to somebody, probably somebody that they know. What amazed me was how every single person that has since found out about my relationship ending has not been shocked. I said, oh my goodness, I can't believe you've finally done it. So many people could see what was going on. And when I started to confide in people, it's having that confidence of, it's not in my head. This isn't just me not being able to take a joke, or me with the sort of the issues, if you like. When other people can see it, it gives you a little bit more confidence in yourself. And I've been very, very fortunate. My family and friends have been an absolute tower of strength. There are some amazing resources on the internet now. And I'd just say, listen to your gut feeling. Talk to people. That's the first stage. But listen to your gut feeling. And if you really feel that it's not right, chances are it absolutely isn't.
Yeah, and I think it's good you said listen to that gut feeling, because I'm sure Tom does as well, but I have a lot of clients who are telling me this is going on. I know it's not right, but I'm not quite sure what it is. Mm-hmm. And they need someone just to kind of suggest that maybe it could be abuse. Mm-hmm. You know, and that is the first step, you know, talking to friends and family where you can be supported and feel that you're not alone. Because I think a lot of victims feel so alone. They feel that guilt. They feel that shame. They feel that fear.
Yeah.
And especially if they don't know what to do, they maybe don't want to leave a relationship or a marriage because of children. And I know for you, Sarah, that was a big thing. I know you carried a lot of guilt for your children. And, you know, they were always at the top of, you know, as long as the children are okay.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. They're the reason that I'd stayed longer in that relationship, if I'm honest. I think I said to you, if I hadn't have had children with him, I'd have been out of there a couple of years beforehand, because I really didn't like the way that he spoke to me. However, when you're a mom, it's not just about you, you know, it's the children and the upheaval. Was that something I wanted to put them through? Well, it turns out, after a lot of thinking, that what I didn't want to put them through was living in a home that felt like that anymore. The hostility in that house was massive. That there was conflict all the time. We were all walking on eggshells, and I decided that wasn't what I would choose for my children. They're a little older than my children. They're not tiny, tiny. They're still children, they're high school age, but they've accepted things a heck of a lot better than I thought they might. And spurred me on in some ways. They could see some of the things that were happening. They're not silly. They know more than I think we ever give them credit for. So if that's a worry that somebody has, it was my biggest worry. I was worried I'd lose my children over this, that they'd decide mom was the bad person for leaving dad, and that they'd stay with dad, and I wouldn't see them very often, and that couldn't actually be further from the case.
It's interesting actually you saying about with your friends and family that were there for support for you, and then saying afterwards, I had that experience with my own friends and family, that after my wife and I separated, that they all came out and went, God, well, we haven't been seeing that coming for ages, and not because of the same situation as your own. But I think the other point is,
when I was asking you around what advice would you give to people, I suppose equally, what about, I was just thinking about the best advices for people if you're actually watching this, one of your looking on it, your friend, your family, your sister, your brother, whoever it might be, in this situation, the kind of things to be looking out for. And I was just thinking around where you've mentioned around like those feelings of guilt and that it's your fault and you take on a lot of this blame, don't you? And what can I do? What can I try and do to make it better? And let pressure being put on you and you make up. Again, I'm going to reuse this word, but I suppose it's the most simple one, but you kind of make up a lot of excuses to yourself to project to others, don't you, that everything's okay.
Yeah.
So if you are seeing this in recognizing maybe some of these situations with your friend or family member that you think they might be in the situation, it's also very important about how you approach the situation with them to help know that they have support. It's not a finger pointing or, right, he or she is this, that, and the other. And, everything like that. It's about helping them understand that there is support, there isn't there, about that you can always come to me, I will always be here helping you to acknowledge the situation as it is, because you can't get someone else to come and do it for you, can you? You do need to be able to build that strength yourself to recognize it, to be able to say, right, I'm not putting up with this anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. I think there's a bit of a stigma, isn't there? Oh, you don't poke your nose into somebody else's business, or, you know, I wouldn't say something because it might cause trouble and ripples. And but yeah, I think somebody just knowing, do you know what, we can see you. We can see you, and we're here if you want to talk about things. If I'd have had that conversation 3-4 years prior with somebody, things might have happened sooner for me. I don't know. But I was just amazed at every single person that now knows could see a mile off how things were between us. And I thought I was doing a really, really good job of hiding it all. And you know, everything's fine. We'll plaster the smile on and we'll go on our summer holidays and we'll pop some photos on Facebook and, yeah, gloss that over. But no, it's quite apparent to a lot of people. So yeah, just somebody having that conversation to just say, I'm here. If you, I say it has to come from that person, it can't come from anybody else, it can't be suggested, but yeah, the support of friends and family for me has been incredible. I couldn't have done it without them, but it, in the same way, it was nice to have Faye to talk to, because I didn't have to be anybody but myself with Faye, and I could speak quite openly and candidly about how I felt without risk of offending somebody or upsetting somebody or telling people more than I wanted them to know, because you don't want to worry your friends and family as well. So yeah, it's a combination of support for me.
And I just want to mention as well that obviously the work that I do with clients, both men and women, around abuse, you know, people would sometimes just want someone to talk to. They don't want to. They're not at that stage where they want to leave. They're not at that stage where they want to take the steps to get away from their abusers. Some people just want to talk and they just want to get it off their chest so that they have someone who listens in empathy that understands them. Because a lot of clients that I have aren't ready to take that next step, and it's allowing them to make that choice, saying, you know, it's okay just to stay where you are, but you know, I think with you, Sarah, I think there was a little bit of indecision about what you were going to do at the beginning, and then something happened. There was a bit of a pivot point, wasn't there, where you said, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. I can't try and glue everything back together. This is not going to work.
Yeah, and I didn't want to. I'd reached the point where I'd acknowledged this isn't right, I'm not happy, I deserve more, and I love myself enough not to put up with this anymore. And once I'd acknowledged that, that's when my strength started to grow. And you need it. It's a hard thing to do. But worthwhile.
And it's funny, I'm thinking, you know, at the beginning of this year, would you ever have thought that by the end of this year, this is where you would be?
No, not at all. I've probably spent the last 4 or 5 Christmases thinking, oh, is this it? is this maybe next year will be better? And this year I didn't have that. I had a fabulous Christmas with no conflict, no hostility. And yeah, it was, yeah, I'm proud of myself. It's been good.
And how about the new Sarah and the new life? So now that you've been through that, you said earlier on you're making comparisons, saying about like you make the excuses and you've got a nice life and you've got a nice lifestyle, nice home and those sort of things. But how has that all now changed, and how do you look back at that? Because I remember when I was married, my ex-wife and I, we had quite a substantial, nice family home in this really lovely private gated road and all the rest of it. We had a really lovely, lavish lifestyle. And that completely changed when we separated, got divorced, and we moved, obviously both had to move to much smaller houses, etc. But I found that I've never been happier. And actually it was the lifestyle bit and the some of the stuff and the rest of it that we kind of feel like we're supposed to be doing for our kids and projection to everybody else and even to ourselves, that actually that wasn't the bit that was making me happy at all, and what was making me happy was something else. I mean, and how are you feeling now kind of going through that process? Because you said before we got on the call that you've now got your own place and you've been moving forward quite on some big drastic steps. So how's that been for you?
Yeah, it's I'd say we were in quite a similar situation to you, really. A big house, nice cars on the drive, a couple of holidays a year. But part of my reflection this year was to make me realise, doesn't matter what I'm driving. When I was in lockdown, my nice premium car sat there for 16 weeks like everybody else's did. So that went so that I could afford a mortgage on my own. And I now have a house that's tiny but beautiful and perfect for me. I'm absolutely and totally in love with my home. The car that I drive now isn't anything like the car that I was driving, but I'm completely and totally in love with that because that's brought me back my independence and has come with a side portion of my dignity and my self-respect and all of that sort of stuff. So it's not how big the house is, it's how happy the home is. That was a saying that I heard, and for me that couldn't be truer. I feel excited about what my life might look like, probably after the next lockdown. But yeah, I can't tell you the last time I actually felt excited about life. It's certainly not been in the last few years. So there's still a lot of work I need to do on me. I still need to, I feel, find the real me and learn how I want to be. I need to spend some time doing that. But yeah, my focus has changed completely. It's not about material things for me anymore. Presence, the E at the end, over presence, TS at the end. In terms of Christmas, your kids, you know, they just want to see happy parents, I think, and have good quality time with them. So yeah, definitely, definitely changed my outlook on a lot of things.
And have you dealt with the co-parenting? Now you're in your new house and you're doing all this co-parenting. How has that been going, Sarah? And have you had any kind of little bumps in the road that you've had to navigate?
I suppose we're still very early stages in that. I've not been in my home very long, probably 3-4 weeks. And our parenting styles are very, very different. And they always have been. And that was some of the cause of the conflict between us, because we have very different ideas on how to parent the children. He's a little more dictatorial than I am, and sort of quite demand focused, do this, do that, whereas I would rather talk to them rather than at them. So at the moment we have a common, a shared aim, don't we? We still want to bring up our children to be nice, well-rounded individuals, and their well-being and their happiness is at the heart of what we both want. So we have that shared connection. We don't talk an awful lot at the moment. We mainly discuss, you know, arrangements over the children, when they be with one of us and when they'll be with the other. And this is something that we still need to work on, I think, in terms of, you know, how we co-parent moving forward. There's going to be parents' evenings and, you know, awards ceremonies and all sorts of things
as time goes by, which we'll need to figure out. And I haven't got that far yet, really, towards thinking about it. But I think it will be challenging in a way because of our difference in opinion on some things to do with parenting. But that's nothing new between the two of us. So.
Yeah, and I know me and Tom talk a lot about co-parenting and the struggles and the things you do for your children because you want them to be happy. And, you know, it does take time. You're very early in your journey of being single again, of having your own place, of feeling safe. You know, that's a big thing for people that are starting again after abuse, is that feeling of safety, because they may have had years of not feeling safe. So when they get their own place or somewhere where they feel safe, it's odd. It's an odd feeling to have. And you have to come to terms with that. You know, safety is something that a lot of us will take for granted. But when you're out of an abusive relationship or marriage, you don't feel safe. So, you know, that's all wrapped up in trying to be a good mom or a good dad, trying to do the best for your children, trying to carve out a new life, trying to love yourself again. There's so much that goes on. So, you know, with co-parenting, it is a step-by-step thing, isn't it, Tom? Finding that balance.
Yeah, no, absolutely. One of the questions I was going to ask there is what you said about the communication is just around the children. How has that been? Because obviously from what you're saying, it used to be very controlling and belittling in that way. So how is it, did your communication change since you guys separated and moved into this co-parenting
realm? Not particularly. there's still, I suppose the thing that's changed is that I stand up to him more now. So whereas perhaps I would not say anything if I thought he was particularly harsh towards one of the children unnecessarily, I'm standing up for them and me a little bit more now, which then results in a little bit of confrontation. So I wouldn't say that the controlling aspect has gone from him. I still don't think he particularly acknowledges that he has any sort of controlling issues at all, which is, I think, part of the reason why our marriage could never get fixed, because there's, you know, in his eyes, there's nothing that he's done that's wrong. He's quite entitled to say these things. It's my issue if I don't like what he says. So we're still very much in the early stages of figuring out how this co-parenting is going to work for us. So I'm going to be watching all the podcasts about that with great interest. I don't think it's going to be the smoothest of rides, but I feel more empowered now to be able to speak my mind with him, and I have my safe place. So I can shut the door. I'm not under the same roof as him anymore. And that, for me, has made a big difference in how confident I feel in being able to challenge him a little bit.
I had a client since that earlier on this year, a gentleman, and one of the first things that he said, similar to you, one of the first things that he said that he noticed and a big difference was that he now, it's some of the littler things that he now felt like he could actually go to bed at night where he didn't have to put his car keys and his wallet and his phone under his pillow anymore because they might be taken by the next morning. And him now being able to go to bed and leave those things out, and that created his own, that one of his kind of feelings, understanding of safety now that actually he shouldn't have to live like that. And he can actually, and he's been able to build up a lot more confidence and a lot more strength. And like you, he's able to now still receive a lot of the same communication he did before, but he manages it and has a much better coping strategy for it now, and his own strength to not have to deal with it all the time and be under one roof, like you said. So that's really important. And how are you, obviously you've got children as well, how are you mentioned before how they've done really well and how they've coped really well, but how's the relationship as well between both parents? They spend a lot of time with both you and with dad, or?
They're doing alternate weekend with him and then a night in the week. My older child is probably forming their own conclusions on our relationship and on how mom and dad have behaved, and I don't think they feel particularly enamoured about the way that their dad has behaved, not particularly the last 6 weeks or so before my house went through, because things got very, very choppy, very tense, very nasty. It was a vile time those last few weeks before my house went through. If my children had been sort of 2 and 3, they wouldn't have understood the gravity of what was going on and what had happened. But when you have a teen in the house, you know, they're quite entitled to their opinions. I'm trying to encourage a healthy, happy relationship for them to have with their dad. I'm trying really, really hard to be the good mom and say, well, you know, we'll see a different version of your dad now. Now that all of this is over, you know, it's important that you spend time with him and that you build things up. But they've seen things and experienced things that, you know, they have a right to not agree with. I do firmly believe that my children have a voice and that they should be listened to. And so I'm just trying to help them both, really, but my older one particularly is a little more frosty towards their dad. And that's hard, because what I want to say is, do you know what, you're right. But I can't, because that wouldn't be right, really.
That's amazing to hear. I think you're doing a fantastic job in approaching that in such a mature and loving and caring way for your kids as well, because you are a perfect example of someone that's putting their children first. And it's not about you, and it's not about what you think or feel or want to say, but actually it's about helping them to keep fostering that relationship as best you can and to support them. And if they make a decision one way or the other later on in the years down the line from their own learnings, then that's fair enough. But you've been there to support them through that and try to help foster that relationship. So I think you're doing an amazing job. So
thank you.
Definitely. And I think it'd be lovely to end on, Sarah. You know, what are you going into this new year, and who knows what's going to happen? You know, we're going to learn, you know, what tiers we're going to be in, you know, again soon. What goals have you got? What's kind of, you know, this empowerment and you finding out who you are and you're learning to love yourself again. What goals have you got for 2021?
So I want to, and it, I don't know if this will sound after, I want to spend some time getting to know me again, working out whether what I think makes me tick is what makes me tick. I want to spend time, I want to be outside, I want to be doing more exercise, all the things that I didn't have time for before, and just take stock. I think I'm in my home now, I'm happy, I'm safe, I feel like I just need 6 months or so to let the dust settle, and then, yeah, who knows, potential change of career, I don't know. There's lots of exploring of me I want to do. But most of all, I just want to be peaceful and calm and happy, and I think I'm getting that now.
That's great. You know, any divorce, regardless of whether there's been abuse or not, is a huge catalyst for change, isn't it, Tom? It's amazing what people will do when they after a divorce and the dust has settled. Great things usually, isn't it, Tom?
Well, yeah, I spent 15 years in the city in recruitment. And now I do this and help people. So, yeah, huge changes.
Yeah, it's amazing. And again, I just wanted to say that, you know, even though we've had Sarah here talking about her experiences, we don't want to forget the men. It would be great to have a man on here to talk about his experiences of domestic abuse. And get the other side of the story. And it's true, you know, men who go through it, their feelings are the same. They will go through the same things. And I was looking earlier, you know, there's some great charities out there, like, you know, Women's Aid and Refuge, that give free help and advice. There is a man's one called, I'm just reading on my paper, mankind.org.uk. It's specifically, do you know that one, Tom? Specifically for males.
Yep, absolutely. I think the other thing I noticed with men as well, again, just the way that we're kind of white, I suppose, is they also feel that they lose quite a lot of their identity as a man, because they lose that kind of prehistoric hunter-gatherer kind of strong, I'm the man type thing, and it's very fitting, and they lose a lot of that man self-esteem, if you like, and things like that can really impact them, and physically as well, because then it starts to really didn't look after themselves, things like that. So yeah, very important. There are many other areas that Bain I can signpost you to that they just mentioned. So if anybody is in a situation where they need some help or assistance, please, as always, do get in touch directly on one of us, both of us, put it in the comments. You've also got the National Domestic Abuse Line as well, which is 0808 2000 247, and then we can sign patients to any others as well that you need. But apart from that, I'd just really love to say thank you so much, Sarah, for coming on today. It took huge amounts of guts and strength for you to actually go through what you've gone through and come out the other side, and then to actually come on here and talk to, well, I know you know Faye, but me, a stranger, and the rest of the audience that are strangers, that takes a huge amount of strength. So well done, you. It's been a pleasure to meet you, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I suppose that's it from us, isn't it? So we should all just say
yes.
Goodbye.
We've got some more guests lined up for the new year. I'm quite excited. I think we're on a bit of a roll now, Tom, aren't we?
Oh, I know. Obviously, I need to talk to you about that after, but we'll come to that after. Cool. Right. Well, thanks for watching, everybody. And our contact info will come up at the end.